From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie and welcome to Coast AM. Well, first of all, happy Thanksgiving to our Canadian neighbors. Yep, they celebrated it on Monday. And also Columbus Day to you. And a happy 40th birthday to Big Joe in Huntington Beach, California. Thanks for listening to Coast, Big Joe. Later on tonight, Harmonic Wars. Here's what's happening. Well, that Minnesota dentist who sparked an international outcry after killing a lion in Zimbabwe will not be prosecuted because he apparently had obtained the legal authority to hunt. Walter Palmer admitted to killing Cecil the lion back in July, but has always denied that he acted illegally. Zimbabwe's environmental minister said he could not be charged at all because his papers were in order. So there you have it. A gene editing method could one day make pig organs suitable for use in people. Professor George Church and colleagues used a technique called CRISPR to alter the DNA of pig cells to create a better match for humans. The early work in the journal Science aims to address concerns about the rejection and infection by viruses embedded in pig DNA. If successful, it could be an answer to the shortage of human donor organs. Now, I've got a friend, by the way, who's being kept alive from a pig valve in his heart. So pig organs are being used quite a bit for humans, but now they're saying if they can just genetically adjust them just a little bit, they'll be able to use even more. Hey, be careful when you use Craigslist. Listen to this story out of St. Louis. A man from O'Fallon, Illinois, robbed four people who responded to his Craigslist ads offering iPads for sale. The man met each victim on a different day last month in September. After they arrived, he pulled out what looked like a handgun and robbed them of their money. Now, he has had prior convictions in Illinois for burglary and theft, and he has been arrested. But just take heed whenever you go out and buy anything on these websites where you have to physically show up. Southwest Airlines has apparently resolved the technical issue that caused hundreds of flights to be delayed on Sunday, bringing service back to normal by Monday morning. The glitch caused 836 delayed flights. Now, that's about a quarter of the 3,355 flights scheduled that day. It also caused a problem on Southwest's website and the app. In order to get customers checked in, Southwest employees had to rely on backup procedures, which delayed the process. Lines at airports everywhere. Lauren Weinstein, of course, expert on the internet. They say they weren't hacked, Lauren, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
I think it's embarrassing when they have to stop using the computers and have to go back to crayons again to draw out the boarding
like the old days.
Yeah, this they're not saying what was behind this, but the fact that it hit their mobile apps, the website, and the reservation centers, what that suggests to me, with no inside information, is that their back end systems had problems. You know, that this is the often the mainframe systems or the larger computers that all the other systems rely on to get their data to, the ones that actually hold the reservations and the seat information and all that complicated data. And the problem is, you can have hackers, certainly, but you don't need them.
No.
Because these systems are often so old, they're held together figuratively with duct tape and bent paper clips and baling wire. And the airlines are so concerned about cost cutting. You know, we see part of it. We see, you know, the spoiled rotten peanuts and the seats crowded closer and closer together. Yeah. But what we don't see is these old computer systems with extension cords hanging around everywhere and smoke coming out of the power supplies and things, because they don't want to spend the money there either. And as long as that's the case, we're just going to keep seeing this again and again. And of course, we've had this happen not just with Southwest, but with some of the top tier carriers also now.
And in Las Vegas yesterday, they had an engine burnout in a Allegiant plane. And apparently a couple weeks ago, a British Air waves playing in Vegas. So they're having some bad times, but
yeah,
this was around the country.
And it's for the same reason. It's cost cutting across the board. And yeah, you get a little bit nervous when that kind of cutting is going on with jet engine maintenance and such. And what a lot of the airlines have done now is they don't even have their own mechanics. They just outsource to other companies that handle the jet engines and all that. So they have less direct control, less direct ways to tell what kind of quality is going into the work. And of course, passengers have no say at all. They just have to, you know, squeeze into the seats and keep their fingers crossed.
Lauren, though we have your websites as part of our Twitter feed, would you give them out, please?
Yeah, the easiest way to find my various sites is just to go to www.vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com.
Super. Thanks, Lauren. And I've been saying, if the power grid goes down because of an EMP attack or an X-flare from the sun, we are headed for a disaster. And just look at this one small thing that happened to Southwest Airlines yesterday. Lines piled up all over the country at airports. That's just one little thing. Britain's Metropolitan Police have reported an increase in the number of child abuse cases that involve allegations of witchcraft and exorcism. Police said a specialist unit received 46 such cases last year, more than twice as many as the year before. They call it the Project Violet. It's a unit, and they say 60 incidents have been reported so far just this year, an upward trend. In one case, a 9-year-old boy was called a devil child and thrown out of his home by his parents, 9 years old. Children in one Connecticut town almost found themselves all dressed up for Halloween with no place to go after the district banned parades for fear that they would exclude kids who didn't want to take part in the celebration. However, officials from the Milford Public Schools decided to reinstate the parades and other Halloween activities at elementary schools in the district after parents protested the original decision. And that's good, parents. Gains in utilities offset by a retreat in energy shares, leaving U.S. stocks slightly higher as investors still remain nervous about third quarter corporate results. We're going live to Amsterdam. Catherine Austin Fitz is there, of course. Catherine, the markets are still a little tough right now here in the U.S.
Right, but I think, George, you know, we've had a correction, and we're clearly coming out of that correction in Europe. U.S., it's true, it has to go through corporate earnings, but if anything, I think the long-term bull is probably going to reassert. So it's, you know, we're only 10% down from the high. That's not much of a correction, you know, but now I don't have to say, for as I've had for many years, we're way overdue for a 10 to 25% direction. But I think more importantly, the global economy is sluggish, and it reflects that. We have seen debt explode globally since 2007. It's how they addressed the bailout, was, you know, essentially issuing more debt, and that game's up. And at the same time, we have commodities prices dropping. The oil drop is one of the big ones. And a lot of people, you know, are trying to pay that debt with money that they're earning on commodities. And that really has created a global slowdown. There's no doubt about it.
Are you meeting with the Illuminati in Amsterdam, Catherine?
I am meeting with some wonderful entrepreneurs who are working on breakthrough energy. I don't know if you saw Putin's speech at the UN, but he alluded to breakthrough energy. So we're all hoping that maybe things will open up a little bit.
Super. Well, you're on top of those stories. Thanks. Catherine Austin Fitz, live from Amsterdam. Was this state trooper doing his job? Listen to this. A Chicago father who suffered a heart attack on September 27th is outraged that his son was given a speeding ticket while trying to rush him to the emergency room. William O'Neill says that a trooper wrote a $1,500 ticket for his son, Michael, even after an ambulance came to the scene to deliver William to the hospital. Illinois state officials say they've looked into the incident, found nothing inappropriate. I mean, the kid was going 82 miles in a 55. He's trying to bring his father to the hospital. Dad was having a heart attack. The police officer pulled him over, looked in, and said, well, you don't look like you're having a heart attack. But he called an ambulance anyway. While the ambulance took William to the hospital, the police officer wrote the ticket to the kid, and it's a $1,500 ticket. So what do you say? Was the trooper doing his job, Or should he have helped push and get William to the hospital and simply say to the kid, you got to slow down, maybe give him a warning? Here's a great story for you. Of course, as you know, we're on 615 radio stations all across North America. Love them all. But we also, you know, have Coast Insiders, and we stream, of course, and TalkStream Live, which rates the top 25 top talk shows that stream across this country. We, coast to coast, we are the number one rated streaming late night talk show. Thank you very much. Boy, if we were on during the daytime, no telling how big we could be. But at night, we are number one as the late night talk show. So thank you. Up next, the Shemitah. We're still in the cycle. And that's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jonathan Kahn back with us, author of The Harbinger and his latest book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. It is the 3,000-year-old mystery that holds the secret of America's future. Jonathan, good to have you back. It was so important to bring you back for an update. How are you, my friend?
Great to be back with you, George, always.
Lots of new people. They're probably saying, what the heck is the mystery of the Shemitah? Tell us.
Yes. Yeah, the mystery of the Shemitah goes back over 3,000 years. And this is established in the Bible. This is a law or dynamic that was given that every seventh year in Israel, there had to be a year of rest called the Sabbath year, but people don't realize the Sabbath year in Hebrew is called the Shemitah. So during this year, there is no buying, no selling, just nothing going on economically. And then when you reach the end of the year, it comes to something called Elul 29. That's the day on the Hebrew calendar that there is a kind of a wiping away of debt and credit, and it's just a mass nullification. And this thing was supposed to be a blessing, but the thing is that when Israel turned away from God, turned away from really everything it was supposed to follow, the Shemitah, or the Sabbath year, turns from a sign of blessing to a sign of judgment, or it becomes a marker, actually, of calamity. And this comes all to a head in the year 586 BC, when the entire nation is literally removed from the land, and it says that the land now is going to rest for the 70 Shemitahs, or the Sabbath years that it didn't rest. So this becomes a marker, and so the thing is, you know, concerning the signs of the times, this is a marker of or can be of a nation or civilization that has turned from God, and that strikes the financial realm, economic realm, all these things. So the big question is, could this still be in effect today? Could this seven-year cycle actually be affecting our lives? Could it at times become a warning of what can be calamity? And the answer is, and this is why I wrote the book, The Mystery of the Shemitah, is that amazingly, yes, George. If you look at the, you know, we talked about the last 4 years. Well, if you look at the last, even going back to the 1960s, 1966, you have a crash in the stock market.
Right.
Well, 1966 is the year of the Shemitah. Go to the next one, 1973 is the year of the Shemitah. You have the next really massive crash in Wall Street. You have also a great recession going across the world. Next one, 1980, beginning of the double dip recession, crashing of Wall Street, is also the year of the Shemitah. 1987 is here again, the year of the Shemitah now brings in Black Monday, the worst day crash in world history, actually the worst percentage crash, and another long-term crash. The next one, and that's the next Shemitah, 1994, brings in the great bond market massacre, the collapse of the bond market, which is twice as big as the stock market, and it's actually the worst crash that had ever happened up to that point. Then the next one is 2000 and 2001 is the year of the Shemitah. It brings in the next crashing of Wall Street and also 9/11 at the end of it. And then you come to 2007 and 8, and that's the last one before this one, and you have the other greatest crash, the Great Recession. So, you know, this amazing thing that you have not only these seven-year cycles, but you also have that it's specifically geared to the biblical specific year of the Shemitah. And if you look at the last two, I mean, it's before this one, it's mind-boggling because, you know, in 2001, you have 9/11, and the word Shemitah can mean also shaking. It can also mean collapse, and it not only touches the financial realm, but it can also affect world history. If you look at the greatest shakings, World War One, it happens year of the Shemitah. World War Two culminates year of the Shemitah. And many others, and 9/11 happens the very last week, the crescendo as you're approaching this wipeout day. You got 9/11. Well, not only do you have 9/11, but 9/11 actually causes the crash of Wall Street, the greatest point crash in history up to that day. Happened September 17th, 2001. Greatest thing, but not just that. It happens on, in the year of the Shemitah, happens on the very last day, Elul 29. I mean, this is a day that comes once every 7 years. I mean, as far as being the year of the Shemitah, happens on the exact day that's appointed to wipe out the financial realm. So you got that. But then what happens if you go 7 years later?
Mm.
7 years later, you have not only you have the great actually collapse of Wall Street, but not only that, it happens when? It happens 2008, that 7 year cycle, happens in September, that's 7 years to 9/11, happens the second week of September, 7 years up to the week of 9/11, and happens the crescendo happens when they go into the New York Stock Exchange that day, ring the opening bell refuses to ring, even Wall Street gets freaked out by this, and you have the greatest crash in world history, point crash ever. And when does that take place? On the exact same once in 7 year day of the Shemitah, Elul 29. So you have these two greatest things exactly apart according to the biblical. This is a 3,000 year old mystery, gives the exact dates of these crashes. So that's where we were, like when we spoke about. So then, since then, the big question is, where are we? And we are still in a major, major cycle that we'll get into, I'm sure.
Some people talked about September 23rd. They kicked that around all over the planet, Jonathan. Nothing really happened on that day. Are they wrong to pinpoint an exact day? You talk in cycles.
Yeah, well, a few things. One is, what I've always warned, and you even heard me, on the air, you always hear me say this, first of all, you can't put a date that it always has to happen this way, and also, it doesn't always happen the same way. If you look at the cycles, the last two really focused on this day called Elul 29, which was in September, which is, by the way, September 13th, and then you have September 3rd, which is another thing, which is very important. Well, I'll get into it. But the thing is that, it doesn't have to be the same each time, and one of the things is that, people are focusing on days, which I've warned people, don't do that. But at the same time, the larger template of the Shemitah is, and the one that actually has held true over, last 50 years, is that you have a long-term descent of Wall Street, or rather, the stock market hits a peak in the Shemitah, and then the Shemitah begins reversing the momentum, begins going down and down, and you may have great day crashes, but you have a long-term crash. Well, that's exactly what we have witnessed so far, and that the stock market actually peaked in May 19th. There's a long bull market. When I wrote the history of the Shemitah, this has been a long bull market. Well, it reached its peak May 19th in the Shemitah, then begins this descending, and one of the things I said the last time we were together, and I believe it was the early August when we
spoke. August 10th.
Yeah, and that was I said that one of the patterns is that you tend to see more of this at the end or actually it's going to the latter part. And what happened within I think 2 weeks of when we were on the air is that Wall Street began convulsing, as we were approaching, actually it's the Hebrew month of Elul that begins convulsing. It produced, in this Shemitah, produced two of the greatest day crashes in world history or Wall Street history. It produced Black Monday, which was also one of the greatest crashes ever. The Shemitah produced the greatest intraday crash, which is over 1,000 points that went on there. And some of the other things, if at this point, if for instance, say just everything rebounds and all that, simply going by what happened from the peak to the Elul 29, you already have, it had wiped out 16% of the French market, 25% of the German market, 12,000 points from the Brazilian market, and the real new engine, we tend to be very American-centric, of course, but the new engine of the world economy is the Chinese market, and what happened to China, it was devastated in this Shemitah. So this year of the Shemitah wiped away 40%, nearly half of the Chinese stock market. I mean, if it happened here, we wouldn't be talking about, gigantic. from the peak of the United States market to a little 29, it has wiped out approaching $2 trillion.
Jeez.
And around the world, it has wiped out, in just that period, wiped out $11 trillion. So this, if nothing else happened, this has followed the exact pattern of it. Now, you know, we're right now in what's called the wake period, which sometimes is more dangerous than what happened.
Let's talk about that when we come back, and we'll take calls next hour with Jonathan Kahn as we talk about the mystery of the Shemitah. And welcome back to Coast, Jonathan Kahn with us as we talk about his work, The Mystery of the Shemitah. Why do you say that this period we're in now, Jonathan, could be the dangerous one?
Well, one is that the wake period, this autumn, October, and going on period in the history of the cycle has often been the most dangerous. The Hebrew month of Tishri, which is in this autumn period, has seen more of the greatest percentage crashes than any other month, I mean, to begin with. So it's a dangerous period to begin with if you look at the patterns. But there's something else, and you alluded to a very important, which is this thing, what we heard about, what's this September 23rd thing? Well, the thing is this, it is not that date something had to happen, but that date is actually the beginning of a super cycle here, and this is I put it at the end of the book called The Mystery of the Seventh Shemitah. And if we have time, I'll share something, I believe,
sure,
something that has never been shared on any national forum, but it's really what goes behind history. But the first thing is this, the mystery of the Seventh Shemitah is this: every seventh Shemitah, you had a 49 year period, ushers in a super Shemitah, which most people have heard about, not in that way, but in the word Jubilee, every 50th year. Well, it's geared to this seventh Shemitah. What happens during the Jubilee is that everybody, if you lost something, you get restored to it. You lost your house, you lost your home. It says everyone shall return to their family's possession, shall come home. So it's a time of restoration. But the thing is now here's the thing. In end time prophecy, we know that something has to happen according to end time prophecy, is that the Jewish people had to return to the land of Israel, and they had to be restored to their ancient land, and they had to be restored to Jerusalem. You don't have that, you don't have all the rest of them.
1948, that kicked in.
Yeah, and actually, and the thing, the beginning of that restoration, here's the thing, could this seventh Shemitah, because it's about restoration, Jubilee, could this actually give us the time period of end time events and even project into the future? Well, here's the answer, amazingly, is yes. What we know is, we don't know when the Jubilee is by the ancient calendar, but we do know when the Shemitah is. So the thing is that the Jubilee has to follow the year of the Shemitah. The year of the Jubilee restoration has to follow the year of the Shemitah. Well, 1917 is the year of the Shemitah, and you got a great, gigantic shaking all over the world. You have World War I. And during that time, you have the Ottoman Turkish Empire, which actually has the land of Israel, what the Jewish people were driven out of, and they begin to collapse. And the British Empire begins moving in. And there was a little English boy that prayed every night. At the end of his prayers, he said, "Lord, restore your ancient people, Israel, to their ancient land." So now Britain is the nation that's actually fulfilling this. They enter, General Allenby enters the Middle East. He gets to Jerusalem. When he gets there, he finds the soldiers are gone. Nobody's there because they mistook his name, Allenby, for Allah Nebi, the prophet of Allah, who was coming to bring them judgment. And they took off. And that's exactly what happened. So he gets there. So now, for the first time in 2,000 years, the land of Israel is given to a power that's friendly to the Jewish people. So the British Empire issues the Balfour Declaration, which says, now we're going to restore the land to the Jewish people. When does that restoration take place? It happens 1917 in November, right in the exact parameters determined by this mystery, right in the parameters of that year. Jewish people start returning. It's a restoration. It's Jubilee, all these things. Well, what happens if you go to the next seventh Shemitah? Well, that show another, you know, great, this what would be an end-time event, restoration. Well, it brings you to the 1960s, and if it pinpoints the period 1966 September to September 1967, right in that period. something happens. There, a song starts coming out in Israel all about Jerusalem. I mean, it's called Jerusalem of Gold. It spreads all over. It's prophetic because right after that comes the Six-Day War. And now Israeli soldiers, for the first time in 2,000 years, they enter into the Lion's Gate of the Old City. They make their way to the Temple Mount. It is the second restoration of the land. It's Jerusalem, which has to be, happens in the exact period or according to the mystery. And also with Jubilee, what happens is you need to sound the it says you sound the shofar, sound the trumpet. Well, the first thing that happens when they get to that wall or they get to the Jerusalem is that the shofar is sounded, and it's sounded by a guy named Rabbi Shlomo Guren. Now, Rabbi Shlomo Guren was born in 1917, the other Jubilee. It's his 50th year. He's 50 years old. He sounds the Jubilee, and there is the second Jubilee of the restoration. It happens exactly in the period. Well, what happens now if we, you know, you go one more time to the next seventh Shemitah? Well, the next seventh Shemitah is here, is now. And so when is the period, the prophetic period, which could be, I'm not, again, we're not going to be dogmatic about it, but what could be this time? Well, it begins in September. It began in September 2015 and goes to September 2016. Ooh. Now, here's
right,
the thing.
When right in that window.
That began September 23rd. Now, nothing has to happen on September to the beginning, but that is the time period. Now, if it follows what happened in the last ones, what it has meant each time is, number one, war. Number two, war in the Middle East. Number three, war concerning Israel, and ending with a prophetic
And let me ask you very quickly here, Jonathan, that Israel and the Palestinians are really having problems right now, more so than I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, that is, you know, if you look, George, every single one of these events that happened, every single one of them involved conflict. The first one involved the conflict of Muslims who had the land, the Turkish Empire, and they're not going to give it back. The second one had to do with the Six-Day War, which had to do with Jordan having Jerusalem. So conflict is not necessarily, you know, doesn't go against this. It usually is a powder keg to bring it about. And so it's hard to say what could the next thing be, because, you know, you have Jerusalem, but could it be the temple? Could it be the Temple Mount? You know, because we know that's another key thing in end-time prophecy.
That could be. Now, as we look at the events that are unfolding today, do you see this as a possible third world war?
Well, if something happens, if something happens in the Middle East, I mean, you always have the potential for that. There have been a lot of reports of that, the potential of it. You have, you know, one of the things you have also with the Shemitah now in this period, you have a destabilization.
Sure.
You have,
but it could be Syria too, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you have Russia moving in. I mean, America moving. You have planes. You know, you have a conflict. You've never had Russia in this kind of thing before. So you have, you have a lot of destabilization. You also have what just happened as well in this period is you have the United Nations putting up the flag of Palestine. Well, that's another gigantic thing that's going to come about. You know, the word Palestine actually comes from Philistine. It's from Goliath and all that. But the thing is that, you know, that all these things are heating up concerning the Middle East, everything. And so, yeah, when you had the restoration of the land, it was a world war. It was World War One. The second one could have caused a world war if it went more than 6 days. You know, so yeah, that often war is often the catalyst that brings these things about.
Jonathan, as you look at the signs of judgment that are appearing everywhere, what can you tell us about the future?
Well, one of the things, you know, I've given warning, and I repeat this. I mean, this is what the harbinger is that the nine signs that were in the last days of Israel are reappearing in America, and they have not stopped.
Now, when you say the last days of Israel, what exactly does that mean?
The last days of ancient Israel.
Ancient Israel.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, Israel, yeah, which actually had these warnings given to it, these nine signs given to it before destruction, and it happened in 722 B.C., and that the same signs that happened then, and actually also the same signs that happened in the last days of the kingdom of Judah, which was linked to that, are appearing in the world, are appearing in America. And one of the, we've gone through, you know, a number of them, but that they haven't stopped. But one of the things, I mean, you have a nation racing away from God and the ways of God. And one of the signs in the Bible concerning this is that when you have an act of desecration, that often precedes judgment. And you see this with, for instance, with the prophet Ezekiel is taken into the temple of Jerusalem and shown that the whole holy place is desecrated, and then it said, well, there's judgment coming. One of the most famous examples is the palace of Babylon, when the king, this is in the time of Daniel, takes the sacred vessels of Jerusalem and says, we're going to party with them, and we're going to party to the gods. They do that, and then a hand appears and on the wall, and it writes words on this, where you get the handwriting on the wall, and that's where the famous, you know, the warning comes of judgment that night. Well, the principle is the act of desecration precedes judgment. Well, listen, there is something that, you know, you can't just, what desecration is, you take something of God and you kind of twist it the way it's not to be used. And so, you know, the what happened this in the Shemitah, what happened in this summer is, you know, America took, here we have marriage, which is given by God in the Bible, and it is taken to something that was never meant. Well, that is an act of desecration. And then you have, you know, the sign of the rainbow, which is, you know, heralding this. Well, the in the Bible, the rainbow doesn't belong to any movement, it belongs to God. It's a sacred sign. If you take that sign and use it, that's a second desecration. And then the White House, the palace, or the king's palace, in a sense, becomes a vessel. It's lit up in the colors of the rainbow. You got a third thing going on there. And so the sign of the rainbow is actually a sign of the, it's actually about mercy in this, in the face of judgment. But if you desecrate that, what are you saying? So we are racing. I mean, I don't believe walking. We are racing to judgment, and the signs are appearing. That's some. There's more that have happened even since we last spoke to each other.
Jonathan, when we're going to take calls with you next hour, mm-hmm. because people are fascinated with this subject matter, and they are also scared. Mm-hmm. Is this a time to be scared?
I would say that if you're not right, if you're not right with God, you can be scared. But the whole point is not to be scared. The point is to be prepared. The point is to be right with God. The point is, you know, that's the point. I don't believe, you know, I don't have fear about the future, but, you know, I also know, you know, I was an atheist originally. I was, you know, I had nothing to do with God whatsoever, and it took me to be literally hit by a locomotive train, literally, to turn my life around. So, you know, I thank God for that train, but you know, and that's when I was born again. So the ultimate thing is that you know, I'll say one thing, one Hebrew word. The word for safety in Hebrew is the word Yeshua, and Yeshua also is the name of Jesus. So, you know, I would say is that you don't have to be afraid, but get things right.
A lot of your works have been out for a while. The Harbinger, for example, and now, of course, the new book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. Are governmental leaders taking heed to any of this?
Yeah, well, that's kind of amazing, George, because it's not something I'm used to, but I've been called to Washington several times and have literally spoken, you know, on Capitol Hill. Actually, there's a gathering now at Capitol Hill that has been opened up literally because of the Harbinger, and I've been able to speak, you know, to them and to leaders, and there are several people who have run for president or running for president, very famous people who have been reading the Harbinger, reading the Shemitah, actually giving it out. So, you know, and when I've been there, I'm always approached by members of Congress. So, yeah, there is something happening up there, and which gives me some hope. But yeah, and for some reason, you know, in the biblical times, when there's a prophetic warning, it often somehow gets given to thrones or kings or powers. So, you know, I have no control over this, but the doors keep opening.
Where does Syria, Russia, China fit in with all of this?
Well, you know, one is that, you know, we are watching, you know, a really breakdown of the world order. And, you know, you have Russia. I mean, first of all, Syria, you know, ISIS, this whole issue here, which actually began this thing. This is, you know, in the Harbinger, the second Harbinger is called the terrorist, and it's linked to the ancient Assyrians. Well, ISIS is literally, that whole thing in that region literally comes from the ancient Assyrians. They're the world's first terrorist, and ISIS is literally descended from them. And one thing that the ancient Assyrians used to do is that they would, in terrorism, they would behead their victims, and then they would publicize it. They would show it all over. Well, that's exactly what ISIS does. It's the same region of the Assyrians, the same region of the second harbinger. So it's kind of like a returning of this harbinger, which is exactly what happened in the last days of Israel, the terrorist return. So the very fact that you have this whole destabilization, and then you have, you know, then you have all these world powers in there, you know, Russia saying, you know, don't fly your planes, America, or, and, you know, America saying, okay, you know, we've never really had that, and this is all danger signs, and in the Middle East.
Vlad the Impaler, he cut off the heads of his victims and put them on stakes so anybody trying to come into his area could see that.
Yeah, well, that he got, I don't know if he got it from them, but they are the world's first terrorists are literally the Assyrians, and they pioneered this, and they put the heads all over. That's how they did it, and that is, they were involved in the destruction of it, the judgment of ancient Israel. And so it all begins with a strike of terror. The first warning on the nation begins with a strike of terror that began in ancient Israel. Well, that's what happened, began for us in 9/11. And, you know, ISIS is actually an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. So, you know, and but it all goes back to the ancient Assyrians. So, yeah, this is part of the replaying.
So give me your predictions on what's going to happen. How do you see this unfolding?
Well, I see, you know, I mean, several things. First of all, well, you know, one is that America, you know, and America is off its base and is I believe is you know, coming to a great shaking. And, you know, the timing, that's not in our hands, but we are heading that way. I believe a shaking of concerning not only the financial, economic, but greater than that. We're seeing even a shifting of power in world history. One of the things that the Shemitah has ushered in has been the changing of world powers or the balance of powers. Well, if nothing else had happened, and much else did, but the one of the things that happened is that in this year the American age that began in 1871, when America surpassed the British Empire, became the strongest economic power on earth, has come to an end. It's like people just, you know, missed it or missing it, but it actually ended. We are no longer the strongest economic power on earth, and I believe that's the beginning of a shifting in world power. And one of the things that about we see in end time prophecy is that America is not the head of nations at the very end. So that means a gigantic shift concerning America, which would affect the rest of the world. That power vacuum would affect the rest of the world.
How much time do we have, Jonathan?
Well, I'm not. I would say, you know, the main thing, I mean, for each one, you know, actually we have as long as our heartbeat goes, number one, you know, and personally, and so get right with God. But as far as the future, you know, the ultimate thing is we are in dangerous times. And I would say it is, you know, my warning I give, it's later, the time is late. And, you know, things with you on your show have give a lot of possibilities and scenarios how these things can happen. Any one of them is enough to trigger this. So I'm saying, not knowing exactly when are things going to happen or these things, the thing is, be ready, be prepared, and be right.
How did these signs come to you? How did you put this all together?
Well, I didn't, you know, I wasn't looking for it. And, you know, we live right across the river from, or we can see Ground Zero, you know, and so we saw this happen. And what happened is, you know, I'm praying, I'm saying, what's going on? And I was immediately led to this Isaiah scripture, which gives the pattern of when judgment comes or when the shaking comes. And a while later, I'm standing in New York City, and I see this tree, and this which is one of the harbingers, and something says, there's something there, you have to find this out. And when I started seeking, it was like, this is one puzzle piece, and the next puzzle piece, the next one. It kept unfolding, and what I needed is like the next key, or someone would say a word, or something would happen to make sure I went in that direction. I mean, it was like I could not even reproduce that. And so I'd be on my computer, and I was typing in one thing, and something else that I didn't ask for came on that computer, and that was the next key. So it was like one thing after the other till all the nine harbingers came there. And, you know, I didn't even know where it was leading. I had no idea when I began this that the very scripture or vow of that brought judgment on ancient Israel was actually pronounced from Capitol Hill the day after 9/11. I had no idea that, but, you know, somebody did. And so I was being led step by step.
Stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with Jonathan Kahn. We're going to take phone calls as we talk about the mystery of the Shemitah. And his website, of course, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. This is probably one of the most fascinating, scary subjects we've dealt with in a long, long time.